The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets tapping new highs. Consumer confidence soars. ISM indices top estimates. And our guest, Scott Cooley, odds consultant, with bookmaker.eu, all this and much more on episode number 533 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and welcome to November 2017. This is Andrew Horowitz, the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Also, of course, the disciplinedinvestor.com site where we have the podcast, other articles, things that we talk about. Information for you about all the different things that we work on here for clients, strategies that we have for investments, all the good stuff there. You can always check that out and see what's going on over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com as well. Well, there's a lot to talk about. A lot of things happened this week. I got to tell you something. It was action-packed from start to finish. There were a couple of little hiccups in there, the couple issues that happened throughout the week. But generally speaking, it was a good week again. Really topped off by the earnings news out of Apple on top of all the great earnings news that we saw last week from the major tech companies. And we're seeing a continuation of that trend where, companies are really doing very well. They have a beautiful tailwind of currencies. The weak dollar has helped out many of these major companies achieve substantial amount of earnings power, not to mention the fact that they've bought back a tremendous amount of shares. So therefore, while they are showing beneficial revenue growth, and that's really a good thing, there's no question about that. They're also showing significant amounts of growth on their earnings, their bottom line, because they have not only better revenue, they have currencies that are working with them in the right direction to help out their net. And on top of that, they have less shares outstanding. So all in all, things are going pretty swimmingly for companies, particularly those multinationals and the ones that have the greatest opportunity, the greatest power, the greatest ability to really make more money on the money they already have, on their products they have. Now, of course, there are a few of them out there that slipped up throughout the week. But again, the major ones that really have the significant holdings of market weight are the ones that have done very, very well. And that's good for markets. We're seeing that continuation go on. We actually saw the VIX clip $9 right before the close on Friday. The VIX was about at 8.99. This is the lowest in like forever. I mean, this is really low numbers in terms of the VIX. It popped up a little bit during the week. There was some concern about the tax code and tax reform bill, what was going to happen. We'll talk about that in a second. And there was some issues with regard to what was going to be the final pick for the for the Federal Reserve. We'll talk about that in a second as well. All of that seemed to dissipate throughout the week. And the news that came out was right in line with what markets expected, from earnings and economics to things about the potential for the tax code and the tax rate for companies, as well as the Fed. So what was the biggest news? I don't know. But there's plenty of things to look at and absolutely a great deal of information for markets to digest from now through the end of the year. The real question is going to be whether this is going to be a rally that goes right up until the end of the information that was expected to really set the world on fire, from taxes and the Fed and earnings. And after that, what else is a catalyst? Or is this just a continuation process that throughout the end of the year, we're going to see that companies are continuing to say the right things, that the economics are going to provide a very rosy picture, and the anticipation for good things to come is going to help investors stay with the markets? I have no idea at this point. Right now, if there was any wager, it would seem that, well, the opportunity for markets to continue to go higher, I mean, it's the path of least resistance at this point. From a technical standpoint, clearly there is a good amount of momentum that is behind this. As a matter of fact, it seems that even on the days where markets are down, the momentum comes in sometime during the day and pushes the markets up towards the either zero line or just into the green. Even the negative days aren't so bad. Here and there, we see a few of them that are maybe based on some profit taking or, you know, some news item that gets thrown in there and there's some concern. But generally speaking, investors are buying it up anyway, regardless of what's going on. And all in all, that's a good thing, right? All in all, that's a good thing because there is a high degree of confidence. As a matter of fact, we saw the consumer confidence came out and we are just an incredible amount of optimism, not only on the present situation, which you would assume would be the case because when you have more people working and you have a stock market that's doing well, the present situation usually comes out pretty good. So of all the components of consumer confidence, that one you would think with a good stock market, with people working, with you know nothing really out there that's too shocking, that would be right in line with some, you know, moving higher. However, what we're also seeing is that the future expectations are also doing very well. That's really good. Because when people have the thought that in the future things are going to be better, not just the same, but better, what do? Well, they'll spend. Now, we haven't seen that trickle down into the retails, and we haven't seen that trickle down necessarily to the economy. But if they continue to see that they have bright and rosy and very upbeat expectations about their future conditions, and that doesn't change, their pocketbook should loosen up a little bit, their wallet should open up a little bit, and they're willing to spend money. They don't have to save it and sock it all away and get worried about, well, what if? There are no what ifs under a situation where the present conditions are very highly rated, where you have your confidence levels very high in about the future. There's not a lot of concern about, well, what if this happens or what if that happens? I need to squirrel some money away for this or that in because I'm really concerned. No, that's not what we're seeing right now. But as we've seen before, there isn't necessarily a correlation between confidence and retail sales. Something else is going on. The wage growth issue is not really going up with our unemployment rate. As a matter of fact, let's talk about that for a second. We saw the unemployment numbers come out last week, and expectations were for about 300,000 adds because of post-hurricane. Everybody thought that, well, we saw that negative 30 print, and that was an aberration. And probably what's going to happen is after the hurricane, a lot of people will be hired back. A lot more people will be needed in order to clean up and construction and the whole gambit of what needs to be done during and after a hurricane. The thought was that there was going to be a lot more people hired, about 300,000 plus. I saw some estimates in the 350,000 range. We came in at about 260,000. One of the really interesting notes about that release on Friday was that the unemployment rate dropped to 4.1%. One of the lowest readings we've seen in decades. Now, why is that? Well, there was a significant move on the labor participation rate. A lot more people have left the workforce. And as people leave the workforce, the statistics come into play and we get a number that looks probably a lot better than it really is. But still, even if we're at 4.3%, not the 4.1%, even if we're at 4.3%, 4.2%, 4.5%, that's still historically a pretty good number. Now, I know that everybody that wants to work should have a job, but it just doesn't work like that in the economy. Even some of the best economies, you know, look at Japan at 1.5% or 2% unemployment rate, very low. There's still there's always a number of people that are unemployed for whatever the reason. It could be a transitory matter. It could be full employment is essentially in the U.S. 4% or so, 4.5%. That is full employment. Now, of course, the Fed doesn't necessarily see it that way. They want to get more people working. Okay, I have no problem with that. The government wants to get more people working. Rah, rah. I have no problem with that either. One of the things that we don't see, though, that was really something we've been watching for, as I mentioned a moment ago, was the whole inflationary step up. The move on inflation that goes a bit higher because a lot more people are working. With low interest rates like we've seen, historically low interest rates, more people working, wage growth really isn't kicking up. As a matter of fact, wage growth stagnated again. No increase on average hourly earnings in the most recent report on Friday. Now, we had some other big news. We had last week the big reveal. We saw that the tax plan from the House, just one part, the first initial step, showed a 20% overall and maximum tax rate for corporations. And if you look at the early version of this, because it is the House bill, it has to go through the whole sausage-making process through the Senate and then get final approval once all this has gone through and agreed back and forth. But it appears that in this version of the bill, it's very beneficial for corporations, for companies, large companies in particular. Some benefits for smaller companies and very small companies. And there's some, you know, you have to read some of the fine print, which I haven't gone through all of it yet because I'm not going to. I want to wait until it goes through all the different versions, all the different revisions, and then we'll take a look at it. When the bill becomes law, we'll look at it. Up until that point, the only thing you want to look at is the potential winners that may see some significant benefit. And yes, small companies were thinking they were the beneficiaries here. There is some things in here that maybe is not as beneficial for some of the companies in different sectors. But generally speaking, the current and first round of this is definitely showing that there is a benefit to companies overall. Individuals, not so much. Yes, some of the wealthy get some really nice benefits, a reduction some of the onerous issues regarding to the AMT, the alternative minimum tax, the estate tax. Middle class gets some relief as well. But it's still way too early to really look at this and make any kind of commitments because we just don't know. We don't know what's going to happen in the Senate. Now, President Trump has said that, oh, he likes the House bill the way it is. Yeah, if you do that, I'm all good to go. There is a lot of competing discussion from many different sides and places and different aspects of analysts are looking at this and coming up with really what the numbers look like. Paul Ryan was out last week saying about $1,100 for the average middle class, middle income family. But then there was some controversy about exactly who that really is. Is that the $50,000 a year total household income married with two children? Or is it the $79,000? What's the average we're looking at? When you break it down, what do you have to actually do? What do you actually have to happen? I mean, is it someone who owns a house or rents? Is it somebody who has children or not? So it's this whole, you know, politicking. Finding the best possible and then talking about it until you're blue in the face to try to convince people this is a great thing. They're doing a tremendous amount of roadshows on this, and it seems to be they're selling this pretty hard. And the question is, why does it need such a hard sell? If it's a good plan, it should be a good plan to stand on its own, right? But I wonder if for this 400 pages is even going to be looked at by the various senators and congressional folk to read it over and really understand it, because it seems like they are just trying to look at some of the headlines, the bullet points, and vote on that. But it did pass the House, so that's good news. At least it's news on getting this over with, because it's been going on some time. I mean, the Republicans want a win. Let's get that on the table. The Democrats want to prevent a win, even if it's good. But we'll see if there's any kind of bipartisan just something that comes to the table here to really benefit all Americans with regard to this potential for tax reduction. I do not see this as tax reform. It doesn't seem like it's going to change very much of the amount of time or way in which we report our taxes, do our tax returns. It's not going to put H&R Block out of business. Let's put it that way. Okay. It's not going to necessarily do anything other than cut the taxes for companies with the intent on trying to spur economic growth from these tax cuts and hope that the tax cuts will create more money for the companies in order to hire more people, in order to spend more for CapEx and capital expenditures and have that all trickle down. I'm not quite sure that's going to work that way. It does seem like it has some very shareholder-friendly aspects to it. With more money, they can buy back more shares and pay less tax overall. That's good. Again, I'm really curious to see how this all plays out. Now, we also, one other piece of big news, again, a lot of big news last week, was that President Trump finally gave us his answer or his appointment of who is going to be the replacement or who is going to be leading the Fed. Now, there was a lot of thought that, well, if it ain't broke, why fix it? And Janet Yellen has done a really good job. And even President Trump confirmed that, yeah, she's done a great job. But as I had predicted and I talked about it here and I talked about it on DH Unplugged, it seemed to me that we wanted to have, but President Trump wanted to have a replacement that pretty much could mirror and replicate what Janet Yellen and maybe even Bernanke did over the years, a very dovish position as head of the Fed that would have President Trump's stamp of approval, that President Trump was the one that actually appointed that person. And really, if you think about it, Jerome Powell fits the bill. And that's why I was so, I was so convinced all along that Powell would be the one that would get the actual nod. And it did turn out that way. And here's the reason. Powell appears to be a gentleman who leans very dovish. He doesn't like to make moves that are in the minority. He likes to go with the crowd. And really, he's voted essentially right along with Yellen the entire time he's been at the Fed. The big question we really have right now is who's going to be the vice chair. Yeah, if you remember what I told you about this, I thought if President Trump is really looking to put a balance in the Fed like he talked about throughout the campaign, and not just having the same thing we've had over and over the past dozen years with a lot of people that just shake their heads and agree in unison, but a checks and balances, he's going to go with John Taylor. That would also appease a lot of Republicans who are looking for a little bit more tighter Fed, from an oversight and more of a Fed that just doesn't shoot from the hip. So by putting in Taylor, who is not the scripted Fed party, and it's more of an outsider, someone who has a rules-based approach that has been something they've talked about, used, modeled, that is not the exact approach that the Fed uses, that would seem to be somebody that would really fit the bill to balance out the Powell appointment. So just hold on to that. President Trump told us last week that he's not ready to announce the vice chair yet. I guess what's going to happen is, once again, we're going to go through a process of trial balloons and some names will pop up and we'll see the markets applaud or be upset. And the markets are essentially the voting mechanism about who is going to be the Fed vice chair. I don't necessarily think, and this is the one fly in the ointment here, I don't necessarily think that Taylor's going to get a really rousing round of applause from the market. He's a bit more hawkish than the other players. And I think the markets were going to want to see someone as the vice chair who will be a patsy. Just do what everybody else does. So you'll have to watch for that. With Bitcoin reaching new highs, it clipped 7,600, I think, this weekend. you know, there's more and more discussion about this, and there's more and more you need to know about what's happening with not only Bitcoin, but the cryptocurrencies altogether. There's a lot of them out there. I'm not saying any of these are really any good other than it's informational. You need to know about this because this is something that seems to be, at this point, gaining traction to be a bit more mainstream, particularly Bitcoin and Ethereum. We'll even look at Bitcoin Cash and Litecoin and now this new Bitcoin Gold. But it's something that you really need to look at and something you need to, we need to talk about. So what I want to do is have, we had a few guests recently, but I want to bring more guests on because now the whole area of gambling is getting involved in this. So it makes sense to really kind of understand that, how, you know, is this going more mainstream? What's the whole way that it works? What's the workings with this whole cryptocurrency and some of these odds makers and bookmakers? Well, anyway, but let's get to the guest and talk about that. How's that? And our guest today is Scott Cooley. He's an odds consultant and a senior writer with bookmaker.eu. And we're going to talk about a variety of things because they're into some really interesting stuff. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great, Andrew. Thanks.
So first of all, what's an odds consultant? I know what a senior writer is. I think I got that. But what's an odds? What do you do?
Well, to be honest, the running joke in the office is that you have to lose a certain exorbitant amount of money to your said company before you can even be considered as an odds consultant position. So I think it's just more of a pity ploy. They feel bad for all the money they took back from me. So I most of my job is to ensure, you know, obviously I have a writing background and journalism background, do PR. So I try to make sure, you know, we have a position in the public. People know we're out there. Other than just the standard, hey, these are Super Bowl odds. Here's your Week 10 NFL odds. Here's some NBA odds. We try to do some more exotic type of offerings. And that's what, you know, keeps you guys happy, keeps the media buzz going.
I mean, I've seen things like, I mean, there's crazy things, you know, how long will the national anthem be exactly? And, you know, an under and over on that. And I've seen, you know, there's crazy things about, there's even political odds making going on. So, I mean, are you making the odds or somebody else in the office making the odds?
Yeah, they don't allow me to do that, thank goodness, because I don't know if our business would still be around. But I do have fun doing some of the creation type of stuff with those props and odds. I love doing the Super Bowl halftime stuff. You mentioned political betting. That was a big boon for us this year. Well, I mean, the election didn't go as exactly as we had hoped. But as far as the handle type of money we bring in from election season like that, it trumps some of our, you know, what we consider secondary sports, you know, outside of just football, baseball, basketball, and soccer, do more in political wagering than even hockey or tennis or golf.
That's amazing. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe there's going to be weather wagering in the future or something of that nature. I mean, it's kind of crazy all the different things that are out there. But one of the things that you're doing is, and I've seen a lot of these, by the way, I've seen a lot of these political wagering props. You call them props, I guess, right? So,
yes.
So what's some of the craziest props, whether it's politics or sports, that you've dreamt up?
Well, we've obviously in the political scheme, we've had a lot of fun with, the current man in the Oval Office, given his volatility in the social media space. You know, we do, you know, how many times will he say a certain phrase or tweet this? We actually did, when there was all the kind of uproar with the NFL players standing for the national anthem or not, we put out some props, like how many times will he mention, you know, the NFL or I can't remember what hashtag phrase he used, but, you know, we just put up over under odds on, you know, between this date and this date, what will happen? Will any owners, you know, bench or suspend, fine players for not standing? You know, we kind of try to capitalize off of some of that circus, if you will.
But people bet on this, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And it's funny because there's really no edge there, is there? I mean, if you think about it for a second, if you're betting on a sports team, Not that there's necessarily an edge, and that's the whole point of making the odds. But if you're betting on it, let's say a horse race, for example, assuming for a moment nothing's rigged and everything is just what it's supposed to be and all that. Well, you can look at things like, okay, how many races have they won? Dry track, wet track, you know, weather issues. When's the last race they won? Who's the jockey on them? You know, all this stuff, right? You can kind of at least come in with an idea of, oh, I think compared to all the other horses, this horse may, you know, do well. Well, there's something there. There's a little bit of a track to run on and a little bit of information and data to go on. But when you're talking about some of these political areas, I mean, it's almost impossible. It's just for, I guess, shits and giggles and fun, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think that, you know, there are some savvy bettors that, you know, they always think they have an edge. You know, we call them the smarts or the sharps or the professional bettors that we cater to. And they're always, you know, finding that little edge that they think, and, you know, it doesn't always work out, but absolutely. I think for the most part, props are something that are there for more of the entertainment purposes, something to track, talk about the water cooler. That kind of thing. But yeah, when there's no historical context, it is really tough to handicap a certain proposition, if you will.
And then the thing is that on some of these sites, and I haven't really looked at this on your site, but in terms of, I saw some politics, one of the things is the House is not really taking any risk. They're just taking the spiff, if you will, on the between the bets, right? So there's no real risk on the House. Is that how you're doing it?
You know, that's somewhat of a, you know, a theory that isn't completely true in the gaming and sports booking business. The House, not always, but a lot, most of the time, has a position. We're trying to garner action on one way or the other, just for, you know, staying on the political lines. We were offering the highest odds in the entire industry for Donald Trump because our smart guys that, you know, have built this business and done really well in the gaming space, we're very, very, very confident that Donald Trump was not going to win the election. So we took that position and we wanted to track as much Donald Trump money as we possibly could. Obviously, didn't work out.
Didn't work out so well. Yeah.
No. Okay. No.
I gotcha. So let's talk about really some of the guts of what's going on here, because what I really wanted to talk to you about was not so much of this, but I know that, you know, way back in the day, it was easy to get money into a gambling site. You know, you could, there was some credit cards that were available, but then they all shut you down. There was ways to kind of set up these foreign cash accounts and loop money from your checking account and wire it. As a matter of fact, quick story, if I may. Sure. Back, I don't know what year this was. It was probably 15 years ago. So I'm playing online, maybe 15 years. Yeah, about 15 years ago, I guess it was. So I'm playing online poker one night. It's outside. I'm playing like a $5 or $10 little mini tournament, right? And so my kids were with me and they were just all hanging out. And it was kind of a cold night in October, November. And we all just were hanging out up back and they wanted to watch me play poker. So I'm playing poker and all that. I lose this little tournament. You know, I just don't cash out. And I'm like, all right, I'm done for the night. And they're like, no, play again. So I played another, I don't know, $10, $20 tournament or something. It was very minor. And so all of a sudden I get dealt two fives and I'm playing it. And lo and behold, I think I got four fives. I think it was the end there. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm going to win. So I start betting and the couple of guys are betting. And then one guy stays with me the whole time. I'm like, oh, what an idiot. He's going to lose this, right? So anyway, long story short, I get beat. And it turns out that there's a whole, the table goes crazy, you know, all the chat and all that's going on. And I'm like, what's going on? And I'm thinking, I don't know what's happening here. And oh, you got a bad beat. I'm like, I did. I know. Obviously. they're like, well, I'm like, what's happening? Oh, we all won money. I'm like, well, what do you mean? How much money did we win? They go, check your account. So I go check my account. I went $7,500 on a bad beat.
Right, it was like a progressive bad beat jackpot, right?
Right. And yeah, exactly. So I want to, and now I'm thinking, again, this is back in the day when you can't, you know, money, hopping money around was very difficult to do. Sure. So I'm like, I'll never get this money. I'll never, ever get this money. It turns out I did. 2 days later, I withdrew the money as fast as possible, and I was able to get the money and all. So that was a good experience. But nonetheless, but these days it's a little bit harder because the gambling rules, they clamp down a bit. And what you guys are doing is bringing cryptos to the online gaming business.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Andrew. I mean, it, as you mentioned, you know, things have, you know, tightened up, regulations, restrictions. I mean, we, you know, there are still obviously avenues around certain aspects of processing. And, you know, we try to offer what we can. You know, it's hit and miss. It goes, it comes. But, you know, the blockchain technology, the crypto stuff, it's really provided a platform in the space to have reliability, have consistency, to have efficiency, and you, like I said, it's a win-win for all parties involved, because there's a level of anonymity for the user, and then, you know, like I said, instead of a credit card charging us a 20%, you know, fee for a transaction, you know, we're getting charged 20 cents on a Bitcoin transaction.
So are you taking any risk by having? So do you have your own wallets?
No, we do not. We use a third party, you know, company. We are not, you know, a third party exchange where we you know, in this business, we're always trying to limit our exposure and our liability and whatever it may be, odds and processing, whatever it may be. You know, we're just really solely using blockchain as the processing vehicle. We're not, you know, that, you know, not to say that some of our guys haven't greatly invested in cryptocurrency, because they have and they've done really well. Goes without saying, but you know, we, as far as us being exchanged, no, we're not trying to do that. We're you know, we love the financial sector, but you know, we've made it to where we are by staying, you know, what we know best, which is with sports and odds.
So now, when somebody wants to bet in, they take a game. I don't know. Let's just say the current Monday Night Football game. And they want to use Bitcoin or another currency. I know you have a whole slew of them that you can use here, some of the alt currencies. But if they want to use one of these cryptocurrencies, is it basically the same as just saying, okay, I want to put a half a Bitcoin on this bet?
Yeah, once you're into our interface, which has actually been kind of redesigned, just overhauled in the last few months, just to, again, keep up with the technological landscape, always changing. But once you get your wallet and we have the information, you're essentially, you know, depositing whatever portion, a full Bitcoin, 10 Bitcoins, whatever portion you want into your account, and that is converted into U.S. dollars. And then that's what you have there. And then when you cash out, it goes back to exactly, you know, where you came in at. And it's almost instantaneous when it's back in your wallet.
See, the problem with that is that, you know, I've watched Bitcoin and other currencies, obviously, that, you know, there's no necessarily delay of moving it from wallet to wallet. I mean, maybe 10 minutes, you know, to make sure all the checks work out and all the different, the hashtags, the hashing works and all that. All right. So you have a little bit of time between the transfer. No big deal. That's not a problem, Bitcoin to Bitcoin. But the problem is that if I actually bet Bitcoin and I'm, you know, working Bitcoin, I transfer it over and I then transfer it to cash, but then I win and it's cash, I guess I have the choice of either transferring it back. So you're really just exchanging it for cash is what you're doing. And all bets take place in nutshell, dollars.
Right. You put in a Bitcoin, it's 5,000, you get U.S. dollars or whatever currency, whatever country you may be in for that. You put it on the Jets last night, 5,000 to win 4,500. You win, you have 9,500 in your account. We exchange it back for 1¾ Bitcoin, whatever that exchange may be at that point.
And does it automatically exchange back, or it has to be done by the user?
It has to be done by the user. It's essentially a withdrawal request.
So basically what you're doing here is you're providing a cash out mechanism. That's all you're doing.
That's it.
I mean, you're not really trading in Bitcoin per se or gambling in Bitcoin. You're just making it easier. So what you've done, let me just break this down. What you really did was just make it another alternative place versus credit cards, wires, or any other kind of transfers in. It would be the equivalent of saying, oh, we'll take gold, for example, somehow, and or stocks or whatever you want to call it or whatever currency, and we'll just convert it to the whatever currency it is for the gambling. Basically, you're providing a service so what you did as a company is just basically allow for another way to get money in, right?
That's it. That's exactly what it is, in a nutshell.
Is this happening in the industry quite frequently?
It is. It's something that, you know, we've been doing Bitcoin for a few years now. You know, it was initially, you know, some people were hesitant to do it. You know, is this too great of a risk for us? But, you know, our faith in blockchain technology has continued to grow. Obviously, as I mentioned, you know, there's been some big investors and from our end. And I think that everybody's confident now. And obviously, you know, we're confident enough now to offer more than 60 cryptocurrencies for transaction purposes. So, yeah, it's something that's kind of taken the industry by storm. And in every single major book accepts Bitcoin at the minimum now. And I think that it's just going to continue to grow as this, you know, sector of the financial world does as well.
So what do? You link the wallet with the account? Is that what you do?
Yes. I mean, we have a, you know, this is, you know, obviously created a whole crypto department that you know, runs all that and has a keen eye on everything that's going on in that world. And essentially they contact that service department and they get all the information and, you know, the transactions, you know, can happen within minutes as long as everything's going, you know, appropriately.
Right. So what's the big thing these days? I mean, obviously you're in football season right now, so you have politics and you have sports betting and all that. What's the kind of the thing that you see in the industry that's changing? Or maybe something new that's coming?
Yeah. I'll tell you one big thing that we have an eye on is e-gaming, e-sports. I don't know. You mentioned you have children. I don't know how old they are. But this is a sector of the sporting world that is blowing up. It hasn't really totally hit the U.S. market yet. The Asian, European markets
are crazy about it.
Just crazy about it. And we see more people watching the League of Legends, you know, final on Twitch or whatever than we see watching a Stanley Cup game 7. It's incredible the numbers that this industry is garnering.
That's because there's no national anthem controversy.
right. There's a note. Everybody's sitting already in front of the
exactly. Computers, I guess. Well, they also have these things in Asia set up that are pretty incredible. These massive esports rooms or not even rooms, they're buildings. They're just gigantic where they're playing. I mean, and even before this, people were playing for money. I mean, there was actual careers in crazy esports in Asia where people just sit there all day. And I'm not exactly sure how they make their money, but they play against people and all that. And there's just a whole process and all. And that's what they do. I don't know what happens. I guess it's like any other sport, right? You get old enough, your fingers don't work as well, and your mind isn't as crisp. So what happens is, you know, you don't see NFL players in their 60s. Probably the same thing with esports. You have a much, younger group, obviously, younger group playing that. I mean, listen, get me on a Missile Command game or maybe Asteroids, but I don't think the esports is playing that.
No, unfortunately, I don't think so either. I'm well behind the times too.
Yeah, Centipede.
Right. I go old school Nintendo, yeah. Right? Like I'll go right there. Mario.
Yep, exactly.
Right. But again, you know, I'm a little bit behind in the whole space as well, but you know, I think it's something that for whatever reason the kids are excited about it, and whatever that may be, then we need to piggyback off of that momentum. And so we've really dedicated a lot of sources to expand our esports offerings. Obviously, there's tournaments every day and there's head-to-head matchups. And as we know, when there's two or more people meeting to compete against something, we're going to put up odds on it. And so it's something that we're really turning a focus to at our company. And we think it's got, you know, room for exponential growth.
Is there anything that you can't gamble on? For example, the Olympics. I know for a long time they were like, no touch. But is that something that's going to be available?
No, there's really there's no limits. You know, we try to stay away from some of the more morbid things, possibly you might say, or
like death pools.
Yes. Any press is good press, so they say, but we try to have a little bit more class than maybe some of the other, you know, European bookmakers that are out there that do some of those death pool odds.
That's crazy stuff. So, have you ever thought about getting into betting on markets? Like, for example, pick your market, whatever it is, you know, the stock market will finish above this level or that level by this date.
Yeah, Certainly. Yeah, we have done, you know, S&P Dow stuff, you know, over unders, that kind of thing. We've even done, you know, Bitcoin. What will be the price of Bitcoin at the, you know, on December 31st, 2017 at, you know, 12 p.m. Eastern? We were obviously too low on our projections. It seems like it's going to be. Fortunately, a lot of people, you know, bet the under as well. So we do some. I wish we would do more. I think that, again, you know, our business is sports and gaming. And I think that, you know, to not get beat up by the sharps, the pros, the guys that are going to know, you know, we have to dedicate, you know, a whole wealth of resources to getting smart people into our office and setting those numbers for us instead of just kind of taking a stab and, hey, you know, great, you know, we got some good mentions, you know, here and there. But, you know, we lost this much money because, you know, it was a bad number.
So let's kind of go to my sport for a second here, which I don't know if you may have. I don't know. And by the way, if you're going to bet on me, take the under on this one, which is fishing. And I know you've written written about bass fishing. I don't know if you've ever written about saltwater fishing, but there's a lot of tournaments.
I have. Yeah. The company I used to work for, we would cover red drum, red fishing tournaments as well. You know, inshore stuff. Nothing. I've done some as well out there. I don't know what kind of are you a deep sea fisher?
We're offshore sailfish, dolphin, okay. Wahoo. You know,
okay. Sure.
Deep dropping for black belly rosefish and nice. Tilefish. You know, in the 800 sword fishing in the 15 to 2,000 foot range. Like I said, take the under. Fishing over here has not been great lately, and the weather's been terrible. It's nonetheless. Do you any kind of? I know there are a lot of tournaments. There's a lot of saltwater and freshwater. Do you do any gaming on that? Any betting and odds?
You know, we haven't in quite some time. I know that in the past there was a little bit of a market for it, and we have. And you know, it's something if we feel like there's enough of a, you know, a buzz, or we have enough clients, you know, asking for something, well, we'll do our, you know, do our due diligence and do some research and put up some odds. You know, probably going to be low limits and that kind of thing. But, you know, I know we have in the past. Recently, no, I can't say that we have. So I'm sorry to tell you, Andrew.
Right. It's okay. It's all right. I spent enough money between gas and bait. I could have eaten out in Elaine Ducasse every night of my life and have the fish on the menu and eat it. And I'd still be ahead at Elaine Ducasse. Let me ask you one more thing before you go, because it's a sport that I don't know. There's a lot of sports out there that are kind of, you know, fun. Some are kind of a little crazy. I have this thing about curling.
Yes.
Curling, you got on the menu?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is something we put up.
That would attract me. I mean, you know, it's just one of those, it's not bowling, which, you mm-hmm. know, but I don't know about you, but curling, I find just a fascinating game.
It is. I agree. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think that you and I and people in the financial world, people in the gaming industry, we're all competitive people. That's why we're intrigued by these sectors of society, because we're always, I want to be smarter than the guy next to me. I think I can beat him at something. And I think curling is a good concept. And I enjoy watching it. You mentioned the Olympics, which we do offer a litany of odds for every single event, every single match. I do enjoy watching. I can't say that I'm a subscriber of the curling channel just yet, but certainly it's something we offer some pretty wild stuff. Snooker, darts, curling, surfing, you know, kind of, you know, wild things on the menu as well.
Is there a curling channel?
I don't know that.
That's maybe something we should start, the curling channel. I like it. All curling all the time. Yeah, I gotcha. All right, we're going to end it here, buddy. Scott Cooley from bookmaker.eu. And I appreciate you coming aboard and sharing some of the things that are going on these days, because not something we cover quite often, but kind of works, you know. I know you have poker, you have all the gaming and odds and all that stuff. But, you know, I know a lot of traders that play poker. I do know that. You know, it's kind of like, I guess, as close as they can get to trying to, as you said, playing against the next guy, trying to be smarter than the next guy, beating the next guy. You know, with some opportunity not to have just total randomness. Well, even though it is random with your cards, but with Texas No Limit, of course, you can obviously have a little bit more bluffing going on. So I appreciate it. We'll hook up in the future.
Yep. Thanks for having me on, Andrew.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Bye-bye. Absolutely. There's more information over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com on how to get to see what's going on with that. I thought it was more fascinating about the whole idea of how they're using and how a lot of places are starting to use the more mainstream or trying to make the cryptocurrencies more mainstream. Wagering seems like a pretty, you know, no-brainer in terms of using it because of some of the ability to just transfer Bitcoins very easily from wallet to wallet, as well as other, again, when I say Bitcoin, by the way, just remember, I'm talking about Bitcoin, but also other cryptocurrencies. There is clearly a differential between all of them, and there is the Bitcoins and the Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin Gold, which I guess is coming or came out recently, and there's now the new SegWit split that's happening, the fork that's going on. We saw that now also, as a matter of fact, some future contracts that are going to be available to be traded on Bitcoin. It's probably one of the reasons why Bitcoin recently, along with the fork, which is kind of a weird split thing they have that they do to optimize the network. But between that that's coming up in mid-November, as well as the announcement about futures options or futures opportunities on Bitcoin, probably help Bitcoin see this meteoric rise again, even after it was poo-pooed by Jamie Dimon and a few others. So right now, really, just an amazing move. If you haven't seen it, you got to look at a chart of this thing. The last week or so has been dramatic. And with that, of course, if there is the potential for Bitcoin itself, the actual Bitcoin, to become more mainstream and continue to have the ability for users and owners and holders to transact and transfer and receive outside of government's purview, you're going to see a lot more opportunities start to crop up. I still think a currency shouldn't be moving about 5 or 10% in a day. It doesn't make any sense. But until this calms down and maybe becomes more of a baseline where it does move, but maybe not as much, and it is reliable, accepted, we can see a tremendous amount of opportunity here for uses of this as long as the networks stay. Ethereum has a lot more uses as well because a lot more built into the technology with Ethereum. So that's something to keep in mind. Next week, I want you to listen to DH Unplugged because we're going to talk about we always talk about a lot of things, but one of the things I just saw this news break this morning about what's going on in Saudi Arabia. Have you seen this? Where Prince Al Walid bin Talal, who is the very famous prince who owns parts of Citigroup and Twitter, and he's on CNBC a lot, and you know he's kind of the businessman of Saudi Arabia. Well, him and 11 other princes, 4 ministers, and dozens of current or former officials were arrested on orders from a newly established anti-corruption committee, which now is being headed by the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salam. And what's interesting about this is we're not exactly sure what they're being picked up for, what the corruption charges are, but this newly formed anti-corruption committee is coming, you know, it's on the heels of Saudi Aramco, which is possibly going to be the largest IPO in history ever to hit the tape. And there's something possibly related to an ascension of a particular family member up the chain. They want to get rid of some of the parties that may have an issue. There's just all sorts of weird stuff going on there. But with that, there's a big shakeup over there. And I think it has to do, a lot with this IPO that they're trying to get placed and make sure that people understand that there is no corruption going on there. Of course, we know that oil rose to over $55 per barrel on crude at the close of last week. And we also know that Saudi Arabia needs oil to be in the, you know, the higher numbers, closer to 60 to 70, to make this IPO much more valuable and much more appealing. So it was very dependent on the price of oil. So we have that going on. We know they're talking about production cuts. We know they're trying to do something here, which we're not very clear on yet with regard to these arrests of these various princes and ministers. And the bottom line is that there's big doings in Saudi Arabia. And we'll try to flush this out a little bit more on DH Unplugged on Tuesday night with John C. Dvorak and myself. We'll see what happens there. But very interesting times. And we'll see how much of the financials are really driving this, or if there's something else that's going on, and whether or not this is just a witch hunt and kind of a reverse coup of sorts to make sure that just simply that the right people that are desired to be in the ascension to the kingdom, it plays out correctly. Going to be a very interesting thing to watch. A lot of news on this. A lot of people are saying, like, what happened? Read the news on this. It's pretty interesting. Well, with that in mind, please do me a favor. We have only a few of the challenge coins left. I don't know how many we have left, actually, but I think there's only a few left. There may be a little bit more than that. But anybody that opens up an Investology account and funds it, goes through the process over at investology.com. Click the information box. You can find out more about that. I'll send you that and a signed book, The Disciplined Investor. Yep, you get both of those. And if you haven't checked out Investology yet, do that. Or The Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, if you're looking for a hedge type of portfolio structure. Maybe the market's a little bit a little on the high side for you right now. You want to look at some shorting. We actually put a short on Overstock last week. Small position, we'll build on it if it moves right in the direction that we want it to go. We have positions in Target as well as about another 65 or so stocks. You can find out more over on The Disciplined Investor on that or any of our strategies that we run for our clients. So make sure to get over there and check it out. Follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the handle. Just one long word, my first name and my last name. And otherwise, that's going to be a wrap for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. I enjoy it. I always enjoy it. Enjoy being with you. Thanks for your great emails. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.